Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. And this is Stephen Zimmer coming to you live out of Central Kentucky on a fine Wednesday evening for episode number 264, for those of you keeping score. And tonight's going to be a great show. We've got one of our favorite show guests coming for you in just a little bit. And, of course, we got some great news and announcements from the award side of Imaginarium, which is going to be a lot of fun. But joining me tonight, out of parts unknown in Tennessee, well, actually, he is in his increasingly famous trolley, Daniel Dark, and coming to you from very close to where I am, the one, the only, Holly Phillippe. So, hello, we are live and loud.
I don't know how live I am, but, you know, I try to presume to be alive. You know,
I know the feeling. In the last 3 days, I told you, last Wednesday I mentioned that I was a little under the weather. I had a bit of a relapse later in the week, so it was an awful week for me. And so this Monday and Tuesday, I mean, it was a matter of catching up. And I had two incredibly long days. And so and then today was a fairly hefty day. And, of course, here I am now. And so good news is, at least, knock on wood, but no health issues this week so far, no major ones. And very excited because I got the best win-win ever. I got 10 times faster internet service and my monthly bill went down. Yes, we had 100 megabits per second cable modem service before, and now I have fiber optic service, gigabit service, and it's just amazing. Just got installed, so yeah, I'm in a pretty good mood about that. But my monthly bill actually went down roughly $10 a month, so it was like the ultimate win-win. It was great. So that part's good. Let's see. I think Holly is on. I see her phone.
I am.
Oh, there she is. Holly, there you are.
Hello, hello.
Chat room's already live.
Yes, it is afternoon for me. The dark one.
Yes, as Rob Hoff says in the chat room, the dark one lives. We've got a very live chat room. We've got
That's
Rob
right.
Hoff. We've got Sandy Lender. We've got Amy McCorkle. We've got Carol Preflatish. And, Carol was one of the first to warn me today. I had one of those cloners on Facebook. You know the type, folks, when you get that friend request and it looks really odd because you know that your friend's account is fine, but you get a friend request from somebody that's using a profile pic of a friend you know and their page has information of that person. Yes, cloners or what would you call fishers? They're fishing, you know, some kind of term. But yeah, I had that happen today.
Catfishing.
So hopefully Carol was one of the first to alert me, and I got a barrage of messages right after that. But hopefully,
he says, did Stephen make a new account? No.
No.
And I'm like, Stephen, you've been fished here.
Yep, sure did. But it's not a hack. It's they literally just kind of clone your appearance to fool friends on your list, and that's what they do. And so it's not a breach of your account. It's actually they're just giving a fake account that looks like you to other people to try to get them. And it's a really nasty thing, but I think Facebook pretty good about catching those folks. And from what I can tell, I haven't got any messages.
Yeah,
I didn't get any messages last about hour and a half, so I think we're good. So we'll just see, hopefully. But yeah, if you get a friend request from me tonight, it's not me. It's not me.
today, this afternoon, I got a text message from the Postal Service saying they couldn't deliver my package because there was nobody there to sign for it and, you know, deliver it. I've been home all day long.
Mm-hmm.
I've been out in the trailer most of that day. And I started, okay, maybe it was yesterday, and, you know, nobody heard it or something like that, or, you know, it was right in between the time that both of us were gone.
Right.
And I was like, so I went on the little website that it had there, and it said fill out your name and all that stuff. I filled that out, and it said next.
Uh-oh.
Well, when I clicked the next, it was wanting my credit card information and everything.
Uh-huh. I bet it was.
And I was like, I don't think so. The Postal Service normally doesn't ask for that.
No, not at all.
It was showing a
that's
UPS,
how they get you.
USPS.com website.
Yep.
Right.
But it was.
I've been on there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I know what you're talking about.
Dang,
yeah, they're good, and I love the ones where you get, you know, PayPal or Yahoo Mail or whoever, like, and they use the logos and they make you think it's them, and they, you know, trying to get you to click these links,
no.
Like your account has,
nope.
You know, you need to check your account security, and no, I think people are getting a little savvier now, but
it's when I get the ones. And I don't get them so much anymore because I started responding to them and threatening them and be like, I'm going to report you to the FBI if you do not stop harassing me, is the imaginary emails. It used to go to info guest and like vendors. I would get these emails saying, your computer's been hacked and we have seen what you are looking at and all the porn you've downloaded on your computer.
Oh, yeah,
and I'm
guys,
this ain't a personal email. This is a business email, and I don't look at porn, so you don't have anything of me. I said, if you've got anything of me, you got me looking all bedraggled in front of a webcam, half dead because I'm working.
Yeah, if
that's
they're looking
you
at my computer, all they see is Microsoft Office spreadsheets and social media platforms.
Go ahead, turn on my cam. Yeah. See what you go see. Cause you ain't going to see nothing exciting. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Our computers, you don't ever see anything too exciting. Unless, you know, Rob Hoff's making posts online, that's a whole experience in itself. His famous fishing stuff, but we'll get into that tonight. That's a lot of fun. But but we do actually have news tonight, and so in that spirit, we're going to go ahead and get our sponsors recognized, and then Holly and I and Daniel are going to give you tonight the Imaginarium 2021 finalists for the Imagine Awards. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We wanted to make it a little more fun by having it here live in the podcast tonight. And then, of course, it will go out on the all the platforms and websites and good stuff later. But, hey, you know, we wanted you all to hear the list first right here. And it looks like Clayton Barnett has joined us as well in the chat room. That's awesome. So, yeah, we're going to have fun here. But let's go ahead and recognize. We got Jump Master Press tonight and Sandy Lender. So let's go first to Jump Master Press. And, yeah, definitely use this code that they give you in this ad. It's a special one, a special code that has been made for us for you to use at Jump Master Press. So make sure you catch it. Here we go.
Do you love to read? Do you love sci-fi and fantasy and horror and mystery and maybe even romance? Then Jumpmaster Press has something for you. Jumpmaster Press would like to give you a 10% discount on our entire catalog. Just go to jumpmasterpress.com and use code IMAGINE2021 at checkout to save 10% on anything in our vast catalog. That's jumpmasterpress.com and IMAGINE2021 at checkout. Jumpmaster Press, a proud sponsor of the Star Chamber Podcast and Imaginarium 2021.
Thank you, Gene and Kyle, Jumpmaster Press. Y'all are the best, and can't wait to actually have some of my own jump card IDs this summer. Can't really looking forward to that. They are just going in for printing now, I believe, and we're going to be having some of those this summer. So,
That's yeah, definitely check that out. Use that code, folks. Use that code. And then now we got to have – here at the Star Chamber Show, we don't look forward to going to Disneyland. We go to Lenderland. That's right, Sandy Lender.
Lenderland!
Yes, and that term was coined by Holly, so I got to give credit where credit is due. So we're going to go traveling to Lenderland now and give you a Sandy Lender spot, so check this out.
Lloyd Alexander told us, fantasy isn't an escape from reality, but is a way of understanding it. Let's tunnel further into understanding then, with dragons, zombies, Aedras demons, endangered arabesque, and many other fantasy creature stories. Fantasy author Sandy Lender invites you to follow her on the Amazon platform to escape reality alongside her. Sandy is proud to be a sponsor of the Imaginarium Convention. Visit with her at the in-person events or in the virtual exhibit hall, July 9th through 11th. We can dive into new understanding there as well.
Thank you, Sandy, and that is an awesome spot. Love the new spots, and, of course, appreciate you and the folks at Jumpmaster Press very much. And without further ado, we are going to get into tonight. And first of all, let Holly make some commentary, because just my impression is that the Imagine Awards this year, we had a big surge in submissions. Entries, and so I'll give her Holly's a little bit, and then I have the list, and I will, and when Holly gives me the signal, I will read the final lists. So go ahead, Holly, chat a little bit about how massive this year's entries were.
Well, this is the most entries we have ever had, and you know, me and Stephen have nothing to do with judging. We don't judge. We have to stay out of that, obvious reasons. And so we don't enter none of our authors' books. They have to enter them themselves and all that, you know. So it is completely fair. It is completely non-biased.
Yeah, I'm recused.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes, that's right. And there's judges that, you know, that are going to do the readings and, you know, score it accordingly. And we have nothing to do with the scoring. We don't touch that. But I do want to say I had to go through and I have to check, you know, I have to verify that they are eligible. So I had to go through every submission to make sure that the publishing date was last year and you know, get proof of all that and everything, and that it was, you know, submitted within the time guidelines and all that good stuff. And I will say this year, the amount of entries was just unbelievable, and then on top of that, the quality of the entries. I mean, if you are a finalist, you deserve to be a finalist. I will say it this year, guys. So take that to heart, you know, and be proud of yourself and be honored that you did. Also, Stephen, I got Stephen to make me up a laurel today, and I emailed every single one of you finalists the laurel. I sent it to you, so you can now use that with your final product, and you can use it to make promo images or, you know, however you want to do it, and share it within your social media channels. But I just want to say congrats to all. You earned it this year, definitely. You very much earned it, and good luck, and I wish the best for you from here on out, and I'm going to pass it over to Steve so he can announce the actual finalists.
Yes, and listen close, folks. Yeah, and I will read as best I can. I will do my best to pronounce names correctly. Don't hold against me if I get a name a little bit wrong, because I want to do my due diligence here. But of course, you know, some names are you know, like I said, you know, might be tough to pronounce. So we've got to give it our best shot. But these are juried awards. So, I mean, like I said, this is a award that's growing fast, and I think reputation and respect for that aspect. And yeah, this is going to be an interesting year. A lot of competition. So some just great writers. But we'll start with Best Anthology, and of course, Anthology.
anthology being multiple authors. And so the names that I will read with these titles are, I believe, editors. Except I think in one case, they actually have a listing with the authors. The first three are editors. So for Best Anthology finalists for the 2021 Imagine Awards, Tales of the Lost Volume 2. And that is Steve Dillon and Eugene Johnson. Tales of the Lost Volume 2, Steve Dillon and Eugene Johnson, I believe, editors. And then also finalist in that category, Mirror Maze, a Dream Punk Anthology by Cliff Jones Jr. Then third finalist, Outback Horrors Down Under, Steve Dillon, editor. And then Bridges Vincenti, writers. And I hope I got that. I might have botched that a little bit on the pronunciation. Bridges Vincenti, writers. N.E. Riggs, B.T. Martinson, J. Travis Grunden, Molly Daniels, and Stephen Golds. And that actually may be the author list. I don't think that would be necessarily the five editors, but maybe they did. But I think that is actually the group of writers in that anthology. So congrats to you all, and good luck in the judging phase. Next category, Best Audiobook Narration. And when we have like less than four, it's cases where, we've simply at this point vetted down to, things have to meet a certain standard to go to be a finalist. So if it doesn't make a certain quality grade, you know, it will not just automatically go ahead. So like if there's less than four in a category, you know, it's definitely, that kind of case. But Best Audiobook Narration, we have one finalist, The Squeaky Clean Skeleton by R.A. Muth. The Squeaky Clean Skeleton by R.A. Muth. Then, next category, Best Children's Book, The Girl Who Grew a Sunflower Taller Than Herself by Vitesh and Acker. The Girl Who Grew a Sunflower Taller Than Herself by Vitesh and Acker. And then the second finalist in this category is Towers by Chelly Larson. And I hope I get that right. Chelli is the first name. Towers by mm-hmm. Chelly Larson. Then Spirits mm-hmm. Among Us by Sherry Howard is the third finalist in that category. And then the fourth finalist is Misty's Wish by Angie McPherson. And that is Best Children's Book category. And now we're moving down to Best Fantasy Novel. And in this one, we actually had five that were determined. That was a lot. There were a lot of entries, as I understand it, in this category. And they determined that there will actually be five finalists in this one. The first one is The Watchers of Mania by Barbara V. Evers. The Watchers of Mania by Barbara V. Evers. The next finalist is They Eat Their Own, Amanda King. They Eat Their Own, Amanda King. Third finalist in this category is Move the Stars, A Gentle Dragon's Novel, Sandy Lender. And then fourth in Best Fantasy category, Curling Vines and Crimson Trades by Kelly Doherty. Curling Vines and Crimson Trades by Kelly Doherty. And then the fifth finalist in Best Fantasy Novel, Serenia, The Legacy of the Magicians by Simon Andre Kledke. And again, that's Serenia, The Legacy of the Magicians by Simon Andre Kledke. And now we'll move on to Best Historical Fiction Novel. First finalist is Betrayal of Angels, Armin Shimerman. Betrayal of Angels by Armin Shimerman. Then Merchants of Milan by Idale Lane. Secrets of Milan by Idale Lane. And The Viscount's Valentine by Chelly Larson. The Viscount's Valentine by Chelly Larson. Next category is Best Horror Novel. And the finalists in this category are The Cassowary by James Sabata. The Cassowary by James Sabata. Next finalist is A Long Come Evening, Stephen L. Shrewsbury. A Long Come Evening, Stephen L. Shrewsbury. Then Dead End Drive by Ian Kirkpatrick. Dead End Drive by Ian Kirkpatrick is the other finalist in Best Horror Novel. Now we'll move on to Best Literary Fiction Novel. Crackers for the Lycanthrope by Rob Hoff is one of the three finalists in this category. Second finalist, The Letters from Lincoln B. by Thane Chase, T-H-A-I-N-E. The Letters from Lincoln B. by Thane Chase. And then we have the third finalist in this category is Have Keyboard, Will Type, Hard Lessons Learned Hard by William Allen Webb. Have Keyboard, Will Type, Hard Lessons Learned Hard by William Allen Webb. Then we move on to Best Mystery Novel. Finalists, Irons in the Fire by Bowen Greenwood. Irons in the Fire by Bowen Greenwood. Faith, A Folly Beach Christmas Mystery by Bill Noel. Faith, A Folly Beach Christmas Mystery by Bill Noel. Then Salkehatchie Secret by Pamela E. Ireland. Salkehatchie Secret by Pamela E. Ireland. Then Operation Second Chance by Linda Reese. Operation Second Chance by Linda Reese. And those are the finalists for Best Mystery Novel. Now we'll move on to Best Nonfiction Book category. Finalists, Guns, Pole, and Democracy by Gary Reed. Guns, Pole, and Democracy by Gary Reed. Sensational Kids, Sensational Families, Hope for Sensory Processing Differences, Rebecca Duval Scott. Again, that title is Sensational Kids, Sensational Families, Hope for Sensory Processing Differences by Rebecca Duval Scott. And then third finalist this category, The Making of Letters to Daniel, Amy McCorkle. Making of Letters to Daniel by Amy McCorkle. And then we move on to the Best Paranormal Romance Novel. Finalists, The Stone Warriors, Dragon by D.B. Reynolds. Again, that's The Stone Warriors, Dragon by D.B. Reynolds. Xavier by D.B. Reynolds is the other second of the four finalists in this category. Then we have Coyote Blues, Karen F. Williams. Coyote Blues, Karen F. Williams. And then fourth finalist in this category is Finder by Lilith St. Crow. Finder by Lilith St. Crow. Now we'll move on to Best Romance Novel. We have What Happens in Piccadilly by Chasity Bolin. What Happens in Piccadilly by Chasity Bolin. Next finalist is Sutton and the CEO's Baby, Book 2 by S. Cinders. Sutton and the CEO's Baby, Book 2 by S. Cinders. Next finalist is Sutton and the CEO, which is Book 3 by S. Cinders. And the fourth finalist in Best Romance Novel is The Cowboy's Secret Baby by Maddie James. The Cowboy's Secret Baby by Maddie James. All right, we're going to move on next to Best Science Fiction Novel. We have High Mountain Hunters by William Allen Webb. The next finalist is The Second Star by Alma Alexander. Next finalist is Storm Shattered, Book 3 of The Darkest Storm by Patrick Duggan. And the fourth finalist for Best Science Fiction Novel, Hope's Game by Mick Williams. Now we're going to move down to Best Short Story category. The Far Side of Heaven by D.L. Gardner. The Last Day by Paul Moore and Gene Johnson. Next finalist, Upon a Wicked Sea by S. Cinders. And then fourth finalist this category, The In-Between, a Carnivarium Origin Story, Patty Larson. Kind of botched that one, sorry. The In-Between, a Carnivarium Origin Story by Patty Larson. There, I got that better that time. Sorry, Patty.
It's a mouthful.
But congratulations. Yes, because double on that one a little bit. And then we have Best Short Story Collection. So these are by a single author. Best Short Story Collection by a single author. Grotesque Monster Stories by Lee Murray. Next finalist, Snapshots, a collection of short stories by Elliot Parker. Then we have Val Hall, The Odd Years by Alma Alexander. And then we have Val Hall, The Even Years by Alma Alexander. Those are the four finalists for Best Short Story Collection. Next, we move down to Best Thriller Novel. First finalist, Death in the Family by Lanny Larsonese. Death in the Family, Lanny Larsonese. Miami Heist by Van Allen Plexico. Miami Heist by Van Allen Plexico. The third finalist is The Book of Promises by Tammy Bird. Book of Promises by Tammy Bird. And fourth finalist in this category is The Death of Innocence by Michael Houchin. Okay, we're going to move down to Best Urban Fantasy Novel. We have Fairy Forged by L.R. Braden. The next finalist is Casting Shadows by L.R. Braden. Then Life Among the Tombstones by H.R. Boldwood. And then Corpse Whisperer Sworn, Book 3 by H.R. Boldwood. And those are your finalists for Best Urban Fantasy Novel. Best Young Adult Novel, Just One Song, Book 2 by Lynn Stevens. Just One Song, Book 2 by Lynn Stevens. Treetops by Peter Bramer. Treetops by Peter Bramer. The Prophecy by Aaron Pemberton. The Prophecy by Aaron Pemberton. And fourth finalist is Guardians of the Edge, Paths of Power by Patty Larson. And that rounds out your finalists for Best Young Adult Novel. Then we have Best Faith-Based Novel, and we have a finalist, Choice of the Mighty by Kenyon T. Henry. Choice of the Mighty by Kenyon T. Henry. And then the last and final category, finalists for Best Poetry Collection, single author, Last Moments of Bliss and Other Empathies by Stephen Dillon. And then Poems of Trials, Triumphs, and Turtles by Sandy Lender. And that rounds out your finalists for the 2021 Imagine Awards. You're off to the judges now. So good luck to all of you. Lots of stuff, lots of stuff.
Congrats to all.
This Sorry, I turned my mic off because my
awesome
throat got
year.
So dry it. Had a cough a little bit there, but I did not want to subject you all to that. But yes, that's it. That is it. Those are the finalists for this year's Imagine Awards, and we should be getting a call in from our guest any second. And it looks like the chat room's going to get very exciting. It looks like RG Westerman has just checked in the chat room, and Clayton is already there. So the battle begins.
Clayton's already making sous recipes. He said, "What sous video recipes of otters?"
Yes.
Dear, Clayton.
A good chat room tonight. You know, we got a lot of folks in the chat room. So log in, say hi, and call in. I'm waiting on our guest here to call in. I don't know. Let's see.
Bob is having difficulties.
Okay, he's having difficulties. Okay, we're going to just give Rob a chance to come through here. He's having difficulties. We might have to use the Holly technique here in a minute if we have any more trouble here. Rob will give you a couple minutes to keep trying. Phone lines are open, so it's on my end. I'm just watching for you. Holly, you know that trick we did that one time? We may have to do it.
Yeah, well, I do a merge call.
Yeah. Yeah, we may have to resort to that. Give Rob about two more minutes to try to call in, and if that doesn't work, then we're going to have to do our little fancy trick because y'all definitely want to have this guest on tonight. And we wanted to have a guest that we had on that finalist's
list. And it's so funny because, as Holly will tell you, we had seen the list, and so we're like, okay, let's get somebody that was a finalist for the guest tonight. And we're not going to let them know that they're finalists. We're just going to invite them to be a guest on the show. And so, yeah, our guest tonight.
And then I'm going to email them.
Was invited to be on the show, accepted as a guest on the show, and then later was emailed and notified they were finalists. So kind of convoluted, but it works. It works. So.
Yeah, I sent them out really late last night, so most people didn't even see them until this morning. Every night this week, I've been working to like 2 in the morning on Imagineering stuff. So, like, I'm so tired. So
well, you're about to get some energy.
But we got it out.
We got him. We got him. Here he is.
We got it out.
Yes.
Hey.
Yes, we got him. And so I'll give a quick introduction. Of course, this is the man, the myth, the legend, a show favorite, a convention favorite, a regional author event favorite. Of course, he wrote the exquisite Corpse series. He's a sports journalist, Serpent Egg Rapture. Corpse, and then of course just an amazing writer, crackers for the lycanthrope. I mean, he is one of the best fishermen you'll ever encounter, the one, the only, the one we call the Hoff, Rob Hoff. Welcome to the Star Chamber Show.
Well, thanks so much for having me. That was quite an impressive roster of literary talent, and there's so many more deserving of so much credit for all their efforts and all their words. I do have to say just one thing, all the oyster otter talk in the chat room, I'll never forget living in the Chesapeake Bay region on a creek, and there's this otter on its back just with a couple oysters, just popping them open and floating around, just dining on, you know, his oysters. So there we go.
But you've been dining out on rainbow trout. I swear to God, every day,
yeah.
Holly knows, I would give her the Rob Hoff rainbow trout update, and I would like, yep, he got the limit. Yep, he got the limit. Yep, he got the limit.
Oh, yeah.
You were on a run, my friend.
Well,
that was impressive.
Crazy.
I've caught 110 this spring since the first week of March, and I'm trying to get to 153 because when – in the Bible, if you read like John later, like in chapter 20 or so, you know, he appears resurrected and the dudes are fishing and they, apparently it ain't going too well. So, you know, he tells them what to do. And the next thing you know, they go out with a hand count on his net and it's 153 fish. So I thought, what the heck, you know, it's not, you know, it's not Jesus doing this. It's actually the Commonwealth of Kentucky because they stock, they buy these hatchery-raised rainbow trout, and they put them in these, you know, lakes. And typically, they're the ones that I've been going to are more like pond size. So it's kind of like, it's not quite fishing in a bathtub, but, you know, it's you got good odds of going in there and coming out. You know, if it's a state lake, it's 8, and some of these other lakes that are in, you know, little towns and stuff that are called fin lakes are 5. So I've been eating like a king. I've lost 20 pounds since, you know, Mardi Gras. So, and that's from eating.
That's incredible.
You know, a lot of trout, a lot of rainbow trout.
Do you have to go out to a boat to trout
not
fish,
for these
or do
things.
You do it from the bank?
Yeah, I'm doing all this from the bank, and this is a kind of a tradition that my dad, God bless his soul, you know, taught me when I was, you know, seven, eight years old. We used to go to Pay Lakes in Cincinnati, and there was a place called Miami Whitewater Forest Lake up in Harrison, Ohio, where we would go out on a boat and fish for trout. And he got me in the habit of doing this, and literally, you know, over the decades, I've cleaned, you know, 1,000 of these things. So I got it down, man. I know what I'm doing, and, you know, I get people that want me to bring them fish, and I'm like, well, no, you know, I have to make it because you don't know what the hell you're doing. So, but I, you know, so
right.
I try to eat as many as I can anyway, so.
Well, you can always freeze them. You can fillet and freeze them.
Well, no. See, that's where I can't do that with this. I remember my wife and I on our honeymoon, we were up in Nantucket, and there was a billfish tournament. We're walking around marina, and they had the best clam chowder I've ever had, big old big old clams in it. But anyway, a boat came in. They didn't catch any billfish, but they had a blue tuna, and there was a guy from the state, you know, Fish and Wildlife that was up there, and he cut the stomach up, and he sent somebody to go get some soy sauce. We're chowing down on, you know, straight-up blue tuna belly right there on the dock, and I'm like, that's what this reminds me of, because the meat, you know, I bake it for 350 for like 20 minutes, flip it, and I just cut the heads off and gut them, and then I peel the skin off and just slide the meat off the bones. I kind of quarter it instead of having like a fillet, because I don't lose a speck of meat, so I got it down. I mix it up with vegetables, so it's pretty healthy stuff too.
Yeah.
I'm going tomorrow, by the way. I'll have another eight tomorrow. The only problem is you do run out of them, and they die. They'll die off. Whatever's left by mid-June, they'll be dead. They won't survive in these
really?
Ponds. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You go down like Wolf Creek Dam and some other lakes that are deeper that have a lot of water flow where there's more oxygen, and I think they put them in. They stock them bigger anyway in those lakes. They'll live, but... Yeah, these all die off. They get eaten. I remember one of the biggest bass I ever seen. I was up at a place called Camp Ernst Lake up in Boone County, and I caught a trout. You know, it was about a 12-inch trout, and here come flying this giant largemouth bass, just inhaled it, and I could see it. It was 5 feet from me, and I knew I couldn't catch it. You know, I had this, you know, tail sticking out, and I was hoping like the lure. I had a rooster tail on. You know, with a little small treble hook, and I'm like, oh, God, you know, hook this thing, you know, even though I had, like, 6-pound test line, it probably would have broke it, but, you know, I had it on there for a little bit. Boy, it was a big one, and he just spit it out, and I still got my trout, so.
Yeah. Nice, nice. Well, that's what counts, man.
That'd have been great to get 2-for-1, man. That would have been epic, 2-for-1.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, though, the Commonwealth of Kentucky, now, I don't care about anything else they can do. They can all, you know, put dunce hats on and parade around in the street for all I care. But the thing that they do that I am all for, and they're really one of the only, you know, contiguous states on the northern border of the Ohio that does this, it's not just rainbow trout. They contract for what's called hybrid striped bass, which are – Kentucky's the only state that puts these things in the river. And they'll get upwards of, you know – over 10 pounds, and it's a great sport fishery. But they also introduce the fishing column I do for River Times. That's in this issue. There was a guy at the end of March up, and he lives in, I don't know if he's Gallatin County or Boone County, but there's a lake called Bullock Pen Lake. And in 2013, the state started, they introduced what's called sawguy, which is a cross, a hatchery raised cross between a sauger and a walleye, which are very similar. The saugers are smaller. A lot of people know walleye further north. Well, Bullet Pen ended up having problems with the dam, and they had to drain about half the lake, and the marina closed and everything else, and they stopped stocking them in 2016. But this guy caught the state record sawguy in March. It was over 9 pounds. And I don't know if any of you eat walleye or gone to the store to buy some walleye. You know, it's like it's up there with – I actually prefer to meet a rainbow trout, but I won't turn down no jack salmon. You know what I'm saying?
Nice, man. Oh, you've got to make everybody hungry. I think you're already making several in the chat room hungry.
Well,
from what
I
can
now
see
oysters.
Here. Yeah, RG. Oh, yeah, oysters.
There once was a wife from Nantucket.
Yeah,
we could go on with that Nantucket theme for a while, but, you know.
Rob. I've been talking to one of your cohorts lately and everything. I think that you're a fan of his.
Who's that?
Westerman?
RG.
I'm a huge fan of the huge butt, and I'm a huge fan of her, sure.
Winkleman. Yeah, we're all fans of RG. RG's awesome.
Yes, she is.
Yes, and new books out, everything.
Yeah, she was on the list that you just read, wasn't she?
Wait, she says in the chat room, you'd better scale it back, Rob.
Yeah,
oh,
man,
I see what you did there.
I'm not going to encourage her by responding. I'm not going to weigh in, but You see, how it is. That we could go back. We did that for probably a half hour last week.
Yeah, I know. Something really fishy about that conversation.
Isn't it, though? You know it.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, it was all hook, line, and sinker. That, you know, I was all in.
You know it.
But
I tell you what, though. Crackers for the Lycanthrope, man. Great book, and definitely, like I said, you know, it's this year was tough. There were tons of people in each category, in several of the bigger categories, and you're a finalist, so well deserved. But that's the book you've been out and about for, and very excited to see that you actually got to get some live events in. Thank God that you're in an area that's has smaller communities and was able to pull off some book signings and stuff during this draconian period.
You can't stop a crazy Hoosier. You cannot stop us Hoosiers. We're crazy and we don't care. That's why.
glad you're getting that out there some more.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, the Crackers for the Lycanthrope book came out, and I want to say it was May where I had the actual books
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was like, because I was busy doing, working full-time, part-time, and the whole thing kind of bypassed me altogether, but it did have an impact in terms of, how much was available, because, the bookstores were shut down, all the Comic-Cons were gone, and, writers' conventions, everything else. But, hey, there's still people out there, man, that were, they were plugging in and doing their thing regardless of what, what the mandates and the edicts and the anointed decrees were, So that was good to see too. But I have to say the Crackers for the Lycanthrope, I mean, there's horror elements in that, but a lot of it came from, I studied a lot of Carlos Castaneda, and the one big thing that I like that makes this literary to me is, you don't know what's real and what's not real. Like, I don't know how many people know the Castaneda books, but he was a UCLA doctoral candidate in anthropology. And he went to the Sonora Mountains and hung out with the Yaqui Indians because he was learning about all this ethnobotany and all this kind of, metaphysical, quote unquote Native American shamanism type stuff. So that's and to do it with the verisimilitude, to me, the whole journal form of what I did was, quite fulfilling to do. And it is, a lot of it's set in the Red River Gorge, and yes, there is some fishing in there, as it turns out. So, among other things.
Fantastic.
Yeah. But it sounds like
that's
full crew
great.
On the, a lot of people up, and, I'm glad you guys are, doing the show live and virtual, so, because it's always fun. There's, always educational, and, I love being on panels and talking to all the people that cruise through there, so it's cool.
Well, you know what? It doubled the content. I mean, we literally have twice the content. And even in areas where the topics are similar on the two sides, you have different panelists on the two panels, so you get different perspectives. And so the virtual side and the in-person side, I mean, yeah, we've literally doubled the content of what was already, one of the most content-rich events in the nation. So it is going
to
be crazy.
That's what took me a little bit
to get the panel
surveys out. I was like, oh, my God, because, not only do I have the in-person, I've got the virtual, so I doubled the programming.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, I think I got it to where it makes sense, and nobody's complained yet, so I knock on wood that I think it makes sense, the panel surveys.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's a lot of content. And, I think that, with you, Rob, I mean, with your range of interests, I mean, you're going to have a blast because a lot of esoteric stuff.
The new venue, the Marriott East, I mean, that sounds, I don't know that I've been in there, but.
Holiday Inn,
Holiday
Inn Louisville East. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
it's very nice.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's very nice.
Oh,
it's a really, really nice modern facility.
All right, that's good.
Yeah, don't go with the wrong hotel.
Yeah, no doubt.
No, you've got the right idea. You've got the
That wouldn't be the first time.
I know you got the right place in mind, but but it's modern and nice, and I mean, it is really an upgrade, and we're thrilled. We finally have the venue that I think fits the event, finally. And
everything's
cool.
There.
Class,
everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've got the, mm-hmm. the whole bottom of the place is the convention center. Right above is our rooms, our hotel rooms. And down there on the convention center floor, there is a bistro. There's a bar. There's a restaurant. I mean, it's all right. We don't have to walk, you know,
right.
down the shining hallway to get anywhere or be in two buildings. We'll all be in one building.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Hey, Rob, we got a question, and I must get this answered because it actually is a really fun one from Clayton. And I think even RG will agree that this is a cool question. Lycanthrope question. In your book, Crackers to the Lycanthrope, are they people turning into wolves or wolves turning into people? And he just wanted to know which of the two it might be. And can you answer that? But he expects an answer, but I'm asking you if you could answer that.
Well, I would say the short answer is both. And it's steeped in this Welsh white Indian legend of Prince Madoc, which, depending on, you know, which version you go by, the 12th century one or the 6th century one that's tied to King Arthur, it has, and like I say, the Castaneda part about, you know, shape-shifting comes into play. Mm-hmm. But one of the aspects, and one of the reasons why this is literary, again, to draw from the Castaneda example, it's like whether or not is this real or not real, because the character is compelled by this nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do, well, I don't want to, you know, spoil anything, but it makes his life so impossible that he has to leave where he lives, which is in Rome, Italy. So the book starts at a campsite in the Red River Gorge. And, you know,
nice.
whether it's a wolf turning into a person or a person turning into a wolf, I can't think of any better place to go and find out than, say, Moonshiner's Arch, which is where the book starts on the Douglas Trail in the gorge.
Very nice. Very nice. So, see, Clayton, you got an answer. How about that? Right on the Star Chamber show. So, nice.
But this book is actually the prequel to the contract with the Lycanthrope that came out, that Hydra published in, you know, the year 2019. That was only like a couple of years ago. So, you know, that book, I mean, you know, you got the same kind of, the actual lycanthropic shapeshift, if you will, is much more cloaked because there's a lot of political background, because there's this whole organized crime syndicate that's run by this potential, you know, U.S. Supreme Court nominee, and all this nuclear power plant sabotage layered over top of it. But, you know, this Crackers book, it's like a travel, I call it a novelogue, really, because, I mean, it ends up going to, like, South and North Padre Island, down into Southern California and down into the Baja to, like, Ensenada. So, you know, I graft stuff I know and have done into the whole thing, like, so that it's, again, the verisimilitude to try to make it as real as possible, like, you know, Moll Flanders in her bar, you know, that kind of thing. Well, maybe not quite. She turns into something other than a werewolf, but that's all right.
Nice, nice, yeah. Nice. Oh. Well, I'm just chuckling here because there's a discussion about noodling. Of course, that's catching catfish with your bare hands.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah, let me look at it. No, I don't be noodling, no.
No.
You know why I will never noodle? Have you ever caught a snapping turtle?
Now, yeah, I don't want to.
Maybe a better question, have you caught, killed, and cleaned a snapping turtle? And the reason I say that, I had cousins up in Boone County, and I used to live in Oldham County outside of Louisville, and my aunt and uncle had a pond, and we would catch turtles. And I remember the first time pulled a snapping turtle out, and they eat them. So we had a turtle hook, and one cousin standing on the shell, the other one's pulling the head out all the way because you want to cut, you know, as close to the head, because the neck is, to me, the neck's the best part. And, you know, off comes the head, and then I can remember my cousin, he's like, he had a stick, and he goes, watch this. And there's just this severed head on a turtle hook, and he put that thing in there. And, I mean, that thing chomped down like if it were a finger, it would have put a more than a serious dent in it. So,
and it'll hold on until chicken, the sun goes down.
Hey, I'm going to egg you on a little bit. You've heard of a chicken run around with its head cut off. Well, you should see what a snapping turtle does. A severed snapping turtle
head. Yes, it does.
Quite a whole different story.
Yes, it does.
But yeah,
they'll walk around, and it'll still snap at you without a head. You know, the head could be without the body. It will still snap at you. And my brother used to take a stick and let a bite onto it, chomp onto it, you know, and then he'd hang it, like, on a nail there on our shed while he was cleaning the turtle. And that sucker would hang on so it got, like, dark. And then it finally would let go. Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, they are good. I mean, you got to clean them out, you know.
They are.
Get a big 55-gallon drum with water and let them marinate, you know.
Soak.
Oh, dear.
Yep.
Poor Sandy Lender, because she's a big turtle
Sandy,
fan.
Sandy, close your ears, honey.
Yep. Yeah, this is the horror genre part of the show.
Close your ears, Sandy Lender.
Yeah, close your ears, Sandy Lender. Yeah, of course, Clayton, he's being merciless in there as well.
A toast to snapping turtles.
Yeah, toast to snapping turtles. Yeah, I have no desire to encounter one noodling, that's for sure. And I never totally understood the whole noodling thing. I'd rather just pull it out the old-fashioned way with a fishing pole. You know, but
yeah,
you reach up underneath there too far and everything, get you a handful of snakes too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
man,
no
that
thanks.
Is the other thing.
No
that
thanks.
Is definitely the other thing.
Nay.
But I will say this, though. The in the Crackers for the Lycanthrope, the character does, before, he basically flies into Lexington, and he gets a ride. He's got like $70. So he shows up in the gorge with some, you know, fishing and bare minimum fishing and camping equipment. And he does. It's not noodling, but he goes in and wades, and that's kind of when the story starts to take place. Who he encounters in the river, in the Red River, which is, you know, really kind of more like a creek. But it was cool over the summer with all the stuff going on. I actually traveled quite a bit in Kentucky. My wife and I went to a lot of the, you know, Kentucky state parks, and we stayed. I don't camp like, you know, I used to camp some, but I don't really – I prefer to go to the lodge and just go get the hot brown out of the restaurant, you know. But we went we went to the Douglas Trail, which isn't on any maps. You kind of got to know where to get there. It's not like it's hidden that much, but where Moonshiner's Arch is, because that's where the, you know, the entry start. And I hadn't been – I hadn't – even though I've been back here for like 10 years, I hadn't went back to the gorge since before I left and moved to Virginia. And it was cool to go back. I made the same mistake I had made, you know, over a decade before. Well, I lived in Virginia 10 years, probably 20 years ago. I took the wrong turn and ended up going towards this waterfall for with my wife in tow. And you know, we're seeing all this stuff all strewn apart, strewn around, clothes and stuff. I'm like, damn, I don't, you know, maybe we should turn around. This isn't looking familiar. And then I realized what it was, and these people were coming from the other direction. And I was like, oh, man, you know, I did this same thing 20 years ago. I'm on the wrong trail. So, but we went to the Moonshiner's Arch and went up in it, and I shot a video on there. I put, if you go to my Amazon or, you know, Rob Hoff on Amazon, it's got the video that I shot in the Moonshiner's Arch with the Crackers for Lycanthrope book and actually taking a picture inside of the arch. Because it's a cool place where there's a chimney, and it's like totally enclosed, and it goes down to the Red River, and then above there's another, goes up on the hill. It's pretty neat. And of course, there's a lot of stuff down there. But it gets into, you know, some of the dangers, because I just saw, I guess it was over the weekend, a young lady unfortunately lost her life down there above the Nada Tunnel. I mean, there's all, you know, there's so many people that climb now and do other things, but even then, just camping out, the gorge is it don't compromise. I mean, if you make, you know, I mean, you can go have fun and do all that stuff, but if you make the wrong mistakes, it can be, you know, fatal. And the book itself deals with a friend of mine had made this rather spectacular leap. And again, it was almost like one of these Carlos Castaneda type leaps that you would see in, like, you know, The Eagle's Gift or the teachings of Don Juan or Journey to Ixalan, some of the real heavier kind of out-of-body astral travel type stuff that, you know, doesn't completely depict something separate from the physical being. And there's a jump in there. I call it Devil's Chimney. I just changed the name of it. But it's a real spectacular kind of part of the book where, you know, there's all this drama going on and it's, you know, being recounted as a journal. Because, again, the book's all written in journal form. So everything's folded in from the, you know, time of before. And because the character goes to the gorge and he's got his where he grew up before he left to go live in Europe for like a decade. He goes home, which is near the gorge, and his only living relative is his great-grandmother, who's barely still alive, and she's the one that bequeaths the legacy of the lycanthrope to him.
Passed it on.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. All right.
What was you wanting to ask him, Daniel, about meeting who?
Babe Winkleman, if you'd be interested, I'd like to introduce you.
Oh, yeah, man. I'd go fishing with the Babe, man. You betcha. The Babe's one of my favorite. Him, Al Lindner. Larry Dahlberg is my all-time favorite. But, yeah, Babe Winkleman, man. Sure.
He's on a Zoom meeting with me almost every Sunday night, so.
Oh, yeah. Now, he's up north, though, right? I mean, he does a lot of, you know, Babe's big into the walleye.
He's everywhere.
The huh?
He's everywhere.
Yeah. Wow, he's got to be up there now. A lot of them older guys that were people that I watched that, you know, like, to me, like, I mean, I love watching Babe and Al Lindner do their thing. And even the, like, the largemouth type bass fishermen, the Bill Dance and the Jimmy Houstons and all them, but Larry Dahlberg was one of the most interesting fishermen that I think, because, you know, I haven't really world fished a lot. And I mean, I like guys like the writers, like, you know, Thomas McGuane, who wrote a lot about, you know, sports fishing, and Jim Harrison. But, yeah, Dahlberg and Babe Winkleman, his wife cooks. I can't remember her name, but I can remember on his shows he used to have, there'd be a part where she'd be cooking in the kitchen some of the catch. So,
yeah.
You know, that was good to see. So why are you zooming with him?
He's in an organization that I'm in.
Okay, now this is starting to ring a bell. It's like a business organization?
Yeah.
The Illuminati.
It's the Illuminati? is that a cigar brand? Is that a cigar brand? Is that the name of your trolley? No, that's Gentleman's Cigar, right? I see you all the time on Instagram. I'm on Rob Hoff Author, and you're on Gentleman's Cigar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's a member of C-Suite with me.
All right. There was somebody else, wasn't there, that it was in, was it Middle Tennessee State? Or am I thinking of something else?
That's something else.
Okay.
Yeah. But if you're available on a Sunday night and everything, I'd like to get you on there so you have a chance to.
Hey, Dee, go on the Instagram at Rob Hoff Author one. I got like three of them. I got a like it, Rob Hoff, Lycanthrope, Rob Hoff, Chills of Kentucky. I don't know why I did that. I probably should have just did one. But DM
like
me on there, man, with the details, all right?
There you go, Clayton. That's Clayton's question. Was it this Rob on IG? And I was like, yeah, he's got a couple accounts. I didn't realize he had three. So, yeah, I'm even learning something.
Okay. Let a lesson be learned. I started one before I had my first book out, The Cosmic Egg Rapture, which I got to get this in real quick, though. This is all I focus on the Chills of Kentucky with Rob Hoff Chills of Kentucky with this one. But I just had the audio book come out, And the narrator's name is Lily Sage. And, oh, my God, I listened to the whole thing as soon as she got done. She wanted me to hear it. As, you know, it's not really my decision because it all has to go through Hydra and then, you know, Amazon and ACX and all that. But I was absolutely blown away by how, you know, extraordinarily perfect she was for this because, you know, anytime you have – and I'm going to – because the audiobook on the Imagine, I didn't realize you even had that because I hadn't had one come out. I really wasn't even thinking about it. And I got a hold of her on Twitter. I saw her – and I just said, hey, you interested in checking this out? And next thing I know, she's, you know – she's under contract and
nice.
Or whatever they do through the publisher and
ACX. Yeah.
But she's absolutely amazing. If you go, it's all, you know, if you go to the Amazon now and the Cosmic Egg Rapture, it's, you know, the Kindle, the paperback and now the Audible. And I was amazed by how well she did it because it's just one person and she delivers the male voices, you know, really well, because I was kind of like, I don't know,
right.
You know, but it was amazing to hear how she just, you know, separates the characters and then the women characters that are in there, especially the one that's on the book cover, Serena. Oh man, she nailed that, and I was just enthralled listening to it. I was like, wow. This is a really good book.
Oh, narrators. Narrators are so talented. I mean, people just don't realize how much work goes into an audiobook. But, you know, an actor, yeah, they deliver lines or whatever, but they have their facial expressions to use. They have their body language to use. A voice actor don't have that. You don't have the visual.
Oh.
Literally, all you have is the audio. So it has to be perfect, and so the delivery
right.
has to be spot on, and
yeah.
you've got to also, when you're doing the audiobook of another author, you have to, you know, deliver their voice. What do
mm-hmm.
they hear their characters? What tone does their
right.
characters have, you
mm-hmm.
know, and they deliver. It's amazing.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
I have heard, you know,
yeah.
since we got into doing audiobooks, it's done well,
and when you really have that distinction in the characters and just the inflection and the way they break up dialogue and how they go about doing it, and I love the way she says egg. She says ag, and it's like every time she
nice.
Says it, I just want to, yeah, it's, you know, but I think she might be doing Serpent Egg Rapture. Of course, the content on that tips towards the horror end pretty heavily. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'll ask her if she's going to, you know, because I think she got done like at the end of last year and then it got snagged up some, you know, whatever. So it just came out like, what is today? The 5th? I think it
yeah.
came out a couple days
yeah.
ago.
Nice.
So
nice.
It took a minute to get it all up and running.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, ACX had some backlog issues
mm-hmm.
or something, she was telling
oh,
me.
Oh, God,
yeah.
They're always, yeah.
Yeah, they're backlogged.
Well, that's excellent news. And
yeah, excellent news. You got that right.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, don't go egging RG on. All right.
Yeah, RG knows I'm an expert when it comes to the punnies. Yeah, the punnies.
Yeah, we got into how things were explosive last week. How explosive it was last week. We were
RG
right
is a doll.
Yeah.
Yeah, Clayton's going to be talking about, yeah, definitely, yeah, he's just gone through his whole experience narrating his own work and, yeah, successfully,
mm-hmm.
yeah, got through that process. So, yeah, we're going to be having Clayton on pretty soon to talk
cool.
about that and his first audio book release. But, yeah, the narrators, yeah, they're fun because we had one of the most legendary Star Chamber show appearances ever with Marnie Young
oh, yeah.
when she did
Marnie,
she
yeah.
did her
yes.
Star Chamber show guest appearance from Grand Central Station in New York City.
Yes.
Yeah, she literally did her call-in from there. Talk about
you know,
that.
I hooked up with her on LinkedIn. And then we started going back and forth, and I was getting ready to get on one of the Star Chamber
yeah.
Previous episodes, and Yeah, she does great work. I love seeing her. She was in a movie that was like the Jane Augusta Evans.
Really good
story,
actress, too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But she does that audio sorceress. I mean, she's got a ton of titles coming through. But, you know, my thing is just if you want to do it, here's your rights to do it, and you go do it, and give me, you know, if you want to give me some money later, that's cool.
Yeah.
But I thought about doing that as well, narrating, because I did narrate one, and I used to work on I had a couple radio station gigs during my time where I deliver, like, news and stuff and commercials. And when I really, because I had a guy lined up that was kind of interested in doing it. He does a lot of scores for, indie horror films, a dude named David Boley. And he ended up moving to Dayton, and I just kind of dropped it just to keep writing more books. And when I thought about it on the Cosmic Egg, I'm like, you know, I could do the dude's voices, but, me trying to do Serena, it just seemed like sacrilegious, you know. I was like, I can't do that. There ain't no way. So, Lily, though, I tell you, it's, you know, just her voice is amazing, the delivery, all the nuances that need to be there are just in place, and, you know, where the, you know, the action switches, it's like she's right there with it. It was, you know, I thought it was perfect. I'm really happy and, you know, blessed that she was the one doing it, because she had really turned out, you know, it turned out far beyond my expectations, just like the cover.
Your expectations.
I got great expectations now, buddy. Watch out.
Egg.
We're going.
That's right. Yeah, RG is thinking this is going too egregious now. Egregious.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have to. We won't.
I'm staying out of the trap room if she's on there rolling, so.
No, she's rolling.
Hey, because I'm going to tell you, all shell will break out. I'm just saying. So.
That's right.
But, no, I don't want to ask you why you're on here. See, I was thinking about this. Oh, go ahead.
Oh. What was some of your earlier influences as far as reading? I mean, what did you read for fun?
Oh, well, the reading, my old grandma, God bless her soul, taught me really how to read, and she had me reading a lot. Now, I kind of pulled a little bit from that experience, like the character and the great-grandmother in The Crackers for the Lycanthrope. It goes through this whole thing where she teaches him, because she had, like, custody of him when he was little, and she taught him to read, because she claimed descendancy to Edgar Allan Poe. So she had this little kid reading all these Edgar Allan Poe stories out loud. That's how he taught to read. So that's partly true. But I read those SRAs. I don't even know if they have them anymore. I used to read them like a speed demon. And my mom used to read newspapers. I was a sports junkie because I was, you know, living in Cincinnati and loved, you know, loved sports. And I get books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom kind of would give me like a quarter for every book I read until I kind of started to break her piggy bank. And but my jump really to horror, or, you know, because there's always some kind of horror element. I really consider everything I've written fiction-wise has this literary horror aspect to it. With Carl Kolchak, The Night Stalker, the TV series, because I was like 8 years old when that came out, and I can remember watching that thinking, geez, man. And some of my first real big, like, scares were like that, when, you know, he's up in the junkyard trying to sow salt in the lips of the damn zombie, and its eyes open up, and, you know. But that was like really a precursor to all the X-Files stuff. I mean, I still watch it because it's like, I don't know if you get MeTV down there or what, but they run on I want to say Saturday. Well, actually, I guess it'd be Sunday morning at midnight.
They run the
Kolchak. Yeah, but that was, you know, and I always remember going to the theater and that scene in Jaws. I saw Jaws when it came out. My grandparents took me. And when that head pops out of that kayak when, you know, Richard Dreyfuss is, you know, underwater.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like those, you know, That zombie.
That was scary
scene.
Stuff back in.
Yeah, yes. That was my first, you know. Now the tassels on the dancer and the sting, I enjoyed that too, but as a youngster. And Star Wars, I saw Star Wars when it came out, and, you know, that was quite an event. Didn't really realize what that was until years later, but just being, a kid 10 years old in the theater watching that, the first one when it came out, was I didn't realize I was actually witnessing the kind of history I was, although my taste,
right,
you know, now and after going to college and, you know, high school and reading a lot of, literature, really runs more towards, like, the Philip K. Dick type of stuff with, you know, Blade Runner and Total Recall, Minority Report, that kind of stuff.
Right.
The really weird stuff that kind of, you know, bites into what science fiction really, you know, holds as far as how it kind of sees the future. Because you look at a lot of that stuff, whether it's AI or Mars colonization or, you know, the precogs and Minority Report, trying to predict the future and arresting people before they do anything, you know. But, the reading, right now I'm reading, just so if you want to know, I mean, I'm reading, I'm trying to catch up on some stuff because I've been getting clobbered. All the stuff that was shut down, I was like an essential employee, so I'm working part-time for remote with ESPN, and then I'm working a full-time job on second shift. And it's like, it never really slowed down. The government just added, you know, money to my coffers. So I went out and bought a new car last year. But I decided to catch up on some reading, and, you know, one of the cool things I'm reading right now, I'm about done with it, is Nick Mamatis, I Am Providence, which is like this murder mystery at a Lovecraft convention in Rhode Island. And, you know, it involves one of the things that drew me to it, because the murder, and it's a writer who has his face peeled off. And the theory is it's used as a book. Well, anybody that read Contract with Lagenthal know where I'm going with that, because that's, you know, that's part of that, bibliotech. But I'm trying to read five different. I'm reading the Harbinger 2 by Jonathan Cain, which deals with a lot of Old Testament type prophecy, mysticism stuff coming to fruition based on world events. And one of the big reasons I'm doing that is because Rapture 3, after Cosmic Egg Rapture and Serpent Egg Rapture, the Rapture 3 deals a lot with that kind of prophecy coming to a head, so, but in ways that I've never seen. I mean, I do some of the weirdest things I've seen, so this one's even weirder than the rest, which I like.
Ah, yes.
But
nice.
Speaking of weird, though, I mean, the one book that I'm reading that's kind of real interesting, a guy named Stephen Lee, L-E-I-G-H, he's from Cincinnati, and I met him at a Kentucky book fair. And this book is called Mortal Muse, and I want to say it came out like 2017 maybe, and it's this real sweeping historical fiction about alchemy and, you know, the fountain of youth in terms of creating an elixir that provides eternal life. And so it tracks these characters from, you know, like 15th, 14th century France to, you know, a bar in New York. So, I mean, it's all sweeping, but it's this whole idea of this inspiration embodied by this woman who's this divine entity. To me, it's like, you know, a lot of what I do in the Rapture is this whole attraction towards what's called like the surrealist woman, you know. So I'm a big fan of that, and I indulge in that accordingly. But that book's got a lot of that in there. And I'm also... I'm reading a couple other things. I'm still reading American Gods, which I like the mythic fiction, but I kind of had to stop on that. Because, Purgatory Road, Samuel Parker. That's an interesting book about a couple that end up out in the, going to Vegas and then get stuck out in the desert and are about dead with no one around, and it's like this supernatural landscape kind of takes over. It gets pretty weird pretty fast, but yeah, I'm trying to read a little bit more. But I do want to ask you, Stephen, because the VB Rivertown Art Walk is the first weekend in June, and I'm getting ready to pop some pictures on Facebook. You'll see them of some of your books that are there at the Community Arts Center in Switzerland County. I don't know. Are you going to come to that? Because I went ahead and I'm going to be there for that.
If there was any other time other than the month before Imaginarium, I mean,
yeah, you're going to get hammered.
I swear to God, it's 7 days a week. It really is, and we are so busy. I mean, because you know, we're not to the stage where we have like Dragon Con has like 1,000 paid like staff, and you know, it's not like that. It's we have to wear many hats. We're going to be bogged all that month getting ready for that. So, but hopefully everybody will think that we have 1,000 person staff because it'll run well in July. But as soon as July, that weekend is over, yes, I want to definitely do an event in VV. Absolutely.
Yes. Oh, yeah, man.
Yes, I've got to get through
July.
It's going to be kind of interesting to see what happens over there, because I don't know if you've been following any of the Kat Von D stuff, but her and her husband, they bought that Schenck Mansion. So
yes, they did.
They're talking about buying other things, I guess. I don't know all the details, but, you know, the gallery itself is doing great. I mean, it's the, you know, they never really, they might have shut down a little bit early on, but, you know, they keep running their First Friday stuff, and they were having, you know, bands playing in the upstairs and
fantastic.
The First Fridays. Yeah, so it's, you know, the books are there. There's, you know, I want to say there's four or five of us that are actually juried in to the gallery that are authors, me, yourself, me, and Kip Meyerhoff, and Mike Dean. You got, you know, all your Raiden Valkyrie, the Dreams of the Navigator, the Exodus Gate, all that. Your books are all, you know.
Oh yes.
Right up. In the reading room, they did
That's
a nice
awesome.
Job. They got a new artist in that does these pretty cool, you know, light, like actual functional light lamp sculpture. So no legs.
Oh, neat.
You know, shades and tassels, but like I took a couple pics of them and posted them. So they got the reading room that they've got all
look.
That in there. Yeah, it's pretty. They're doing a good job there. I like how they got everything set up, and it's just, you know, they have so many different artists that it's like, you know,
right.
different media. It's just a cool place to walk into. But I'm psyched for the I know you did the virtual Imaginarium last year, and even that was a lot of fun. I was on a couple panels with
absolutely
it's Jen Mulvihill and Tommy Smith and is it Michael
Tommy
Dean?
D. Yep.
Michael Dean Anderson.
Yes.
Is that right?
Michael Dean Anderson.
Yeah.
Yep.
Michael Dean.
Bobby Nash. Yes. My man,
yeah,
Bobby Nash.
Of,
yeah,
know,
I love Bobby.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. But I like the live thing, man. I don't, you know, I don't really want to even play virtual. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
So for me, that's like, you know, that's like one of the signings I did. You know, was a this cool kind of, it's called Game On in LaGrange, and you know, just they got a bar, sports TV, pool tables, but they have these like Warhammer tables and, you know, where they play Magic the Gathering and they do all these drafts and stuff.
Yay!
And it was just a cool place to have a, you know, signing, sit there and drink some of that. I call it the Carlsberg Special Brew. I don't know what it was. It was like, you know, some of that 12-13% beer.
Well,
yeah,
the type Polly likes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yes.
Too funny.
Oh, that's good. That's good. But, yeah, we definitely are looking forward to the live side of things. But I will say the virtual side opens up to bring in a lot more outside participation from folks that normally could not physically make it. So,
right.
Because of distance or their other countries. I mean, it's really cool how that dynamic is already really showing itself. So, I mean, yeah, because we haven't even gotten half the guests.
Yeah,
we're going to be announcing guests all through
that.
May.
Yeah,
we will. And, yeah, we haven't even announced nearly all the guests. They're going to be rolling out all through the month. And so that by the 1st of June, you're going to see this massive list of folks and a lot of new blood. I mean, we got a lot of new faces.
Yeah.
I'm noticing that you've been popping. And it's like, yeah, man, this is cool. This is going to be a –
And some new faces, some really good people in person live.
Yeah. I know I signed up for one thing that said streaming, but does that mean it's still live? It was in the live list,
yes.
In-person list?
Yeah,
okay.
The streaming means that we're actually going to be streaming it to the virtual event at the same time while it's going on in person.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if you put me in there, I'll make sure to wear my scary mask.
Double bonus.
I don't know how,
there you go.
Yeah, that's all I got. Scary mask. I don't have no like one of these masks running around. You got like what they put on when they go in wherever they're going. I don't do that, but I got a scary mask. I got
the
kind of mask.
It's awesome.
You either wear it a horror con or you get arrested for wearing so that kind of thing. But
that was that one that artist painted for you, right?
Be good, the artist, man. Yeah, you know what? He did some cloth masks too that were cool. It said, get the bleep out of my face with this open mouth.
Yeah.
And I ended up, because when I had the crackers for Lycanthrope come out, because he did this freehand job on contract with the Lycanthrope, because I met him down at the Galaxy Con, SuperCon thing in Louisville that they weren't going to have anyway again before the whatever happened. But I got to know him, man. He does a lot of hard masks. And he ended up doing a cool, I guess you saw it. But he ended up doing these cloth masks, and I ended up getting like 50 of them. And people that were buying all four of my books, I would, give them the mask. And
that's smart.
I ran out of masks, pretty quick. So once they started saying, hey, you got to wear a mask, and I was like, well, okay. When life gives you lemmings, make lemmingade.
Something like that. And make sure it's good and spiked so it gives you a little kick, too.
Mike's Hard Lemonade?
Right.
Yes, Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Rob Hoff's. That'll have to be Rob's first beverage product like celebrities are doing these days. Rob will have to have a hard lemonade. That's one of his first associated products. That would be excellent.
I remember as a kid, I used to collect beer cans. I'm talking about 10, 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Because a buddy of mine in Cincinnati, his dad was a big collector, and he had people have sports man caves. This dude had beer cans, cone tops, all kinds of stuff. And I always liked the old, what was it, Ole Miss frothing slosh. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Uh-huh.
I think I remember, what you're talking about.
Beer cans? Yeah, it was like, that's like onomatopoeia, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, I have one of them.
Too cool. That's awesome, man. So what's coming up with you next book-wise? I think that's a question we want to get in before the show's done. As far as the series with Exquisite Corpse, what any more stuff in the Lycanthrope side? What's coming up? I'll lay this on you, man.
One of the big parts of the Rapture 3, it really ties in. This is kind of the end of the trilogy. This is the end of the line. This is the revelation, the world to come, all wrapped up in one little bundle that has the Exquisite Corpse tarot deck as a guide, which anytime you start dealing with like Salvador Dali and Aleister Crowley and John Augustus Knapp and John Uri Lloyd and some other folks, you're gonna be in for a ride.
Right.
So it's I want to read it one more time, and I got some betas out, and I did want to mention my buddy Dave Alexander because. it's been a year since, you know, he took his life, and he was, you know, a dear friend, and he was a great beta reader, and I dedicated, you know, crackers for Lycanthrope to him because, you know, he got a chance to look at the material, and he was like, it's your best book, man. And I'm like, you know, part of me was a little upset because I was like, you know, after, you know, all these other books I already wrote, he's like, well, yeah, but it's just the easiest one to read. And I think it had, a lot of that had to do with the fact it's a journal. But, yeah, he's missed. You know, he had a lot of health problems. And, you know, he, you know, he's in a better place now. And I'm sure he's reading all his Stephen King and Cassandra Clare and Michael Moorcock and, you know, the rest of it. So, but, yeah, the Rapture, he would have loved this book because he was real instrumental in the Serpent Egg Rapture, which had some very, you know, I don't want to say complicated horror schemes involved, but it did tie a lot into, like, Mayan mythology. So you had, like, these Kamazots, you know, mask, and you had other things that were related to really the Popol Vuh and stuff that had to be kind of, you know, strained and, you know, repurposed to be something more, you know, readily consumed by the eye in a book. And he did, you know, a great job helping me, you know. He just had a hole. He could recognize holes or issues that would come up, like, well, what happened to this? And I'd be like, oh, I don't know.
Right.
I, you know, I wrote that and then completely forgot about it, didn't I? So, but the Rapture 3, man, it's going to be, you know, it's like I say, it's pretty harrowing. There's a lot of, and it's a different kind of form even. I mean, I really took this kind of epistolary approach to how this thing is presented. So what appears fragmented makes sense because it's all packaged together in ways that are, you know, involve this paranormal research institute that is involved in both, you know, Cosmic Egg Rapture and Serpent Egg Rapture. So I like to write each one of these as a standalone so somebody can pick it up and not have to know anything at all, you know, about the other. And that's one of the things I'm doing is we're trying to get more feedback from people that have not read the first two. So I want to make sure that it's a standalone. Because everything I write,
well,
I want to see like its own thing.
Well, I'll give you some encouragement, though. The third book of a trilogy does not have to be the end, as Clayton Barnett has proven, and I can vouch for him on that, and also Michael Williams. And also,
Michael Williams did the same thing, yeah.
Well, in his case, the fourth book,
there's a fifth quartet.
Does not have to, yeah, you can have a fifth book to a quartet, possibly. But,
that's right.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the third book does not have to end the trilogy. Yeah, just talk to Clayton.
Oh, yeah. Well, you mentioned, you know, Michael. I read Trajan's Arch, and I actually posted a book review of that on
my
website, to robhoffauthor.com. But, I mean, just the whole kind of mythic fiction / you know, magic realism. Like what I envision, because I'm interested in all that, and a lot of that gets kind of funneled into what I do. But this Rapture 3, forgive me for indulging, but it transcends that into what I like to call magic with a K, surrealism. I've never seen anything like that. I'm almost afraid of it. I think I've created like this. I've gone beyond sigil. I'm in the hyper sigil stage now. So
nice.
I'd be looking over my shoulder, you know, like William Wilson. I don't know.
Nice.
Opened up a few portals here, a few portals there.
Yeah, that's been known to happen now, Holly.
Yeah. It sure has.
Oh, my God.
Give me a portal.
It's always like, be careful for what you ask for and how you ask it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we might go over a hair, Rob, tonight. And so I want to get in real quick on the live part of the show, how folks can find you, just in case we go over just a hair.
Well, yeah, it's Rob Hoff, R-O-B-B-H-O-F-F. I mean, you can go to Amazon. You can if you Google that, like on Instagram, Rob Hoff Author. Twitter is a little different. I love Twitter. It's at Red Legs Rob, REDLEGSROBB. And that's because I started a Twitter account because I had to. I was working for a company and writing online sports stuff, and they said, you have to have Twitter. You can't do this. And I'm like, ah, okay. So I never changed it. I've kept the same, you know, account. Now it's not as much sports as it used to be, but, you know, I'll jump in there like on the NFL draft and a lot of Red stuff. So, but if you go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, I got my own website. I do offer copies. Like the Rapture series, you can get both for $25 with free U.S. shipping if you use the code EGG. You got to use the code EGG, though. But that's robbhofffauthor.com.
That's right, the Hoff.
Facebook, you know, I'm on there. I got the author page and all that kind of stuff. LinkedIn. There's actually some neat stuff on LinkedIn. I've met some cool people that
love LinkedIn.
We love LinkedIn. That's one of our favorite places.
I've met so many cool people on LinkedIn.
Yeah. I met Marnie that way, and a director out of a pretty good film guy, Evan Peters. He actually met some because he did some like corporate video stuff. I think it was Bond Firearms, because I had these, you know, these questions about. I wanted him to read this. I didn't even know he was involved with production of like firearm stuff, but it was a Derringer that shot a 410 or 45, and he's like, oh yeah, I was shooting the video for that. I was like, okay, because I used to sell guns. That was one I used to sell that was I always thought was cool. So I'd pack a punch, and you know, you can put it in one of those Corset holsters, which the young lady in contract with a lycanthrope definitely needed to have. It was her Second Amendment right, and
that's
a form of, you know, self-protection until, of course, the lycanthrope came into play. That kind of changed things, and it's a whole other
just a bit
piece of information.
Well, I hope you put out some Rob Hoff T-shirts, because I sure want a Rob Hoff T-shirt with the Hoff.
I'm glad you're in my corner, man. I'm glad you're in my corner, bro. I'm headed down to Lexington here in, next Saturday, but it's a family thing. But I went last year.
Well, stop by and say hi. Yeah, have a drink and visit for an hour or so.
Is it over off of Boston Road, right, where you had that? I remember the coolest thing. One of the coolest things I've ever seen with other riders. I go into that Kroger liquor store, and there's them doing a book signing, and they're giving away free shots of Knob Creek.
That's how
and
I roll.
I'm like, ooh.
Yes.
That's how I roll.
Yeah.
That's how we do it.
Yeah, we live like three blocks from there. So
we live like three blocks from there.
Yeah.
So it's
It's
safe to have drinks there because we're only within walking distance. So
there you go.
Yeah, we could always crawl if we have to.
Yeah, crawl, walk, however. But oh man, this has been a blast. The Hoff,
buddy.
The Hoff, back on the chamber, and as a finalist, newly minted finalist in the Imagine Awards.
Feels good, baby. Feels good. Yeah.
Literary fiction category for crafters of a lycanthrope.
Yeah, I always tell people, because it's like, you know, I'm a pathological writer. I've written nonfiction. I've worked as a journalist, in the regular newspaper, magazine stuff, online, a lot of sports, a lot of non-sports, a lot of art history, all kind. You across the board. And you write these things because it's like in The Exorcist where the priests are, there with little Reagan. God love Linda Blair. I got to meet her at Galaxy Con, and she held up Cosmic Egg Rapture and put her arm around me, and I put my arm around her, and we got a picture, and I was like, oh, that's sweet. But it's like when they say the power of Christ compels you, and the body starts floating. It's that kind of internal, machine that goes. And the thing that I like the most is that every time I do something, man, it's like tied into some kind of zeitgeist that's really, prominent. Even if it comes and it gets spliced in later, like with Crackers of the Lycanthrope, the whole, I can remember Gatewood Galbraith when he was running for governor.
Oh yeah,
in Kentucky.
Great guy.
I remember I met him and talked to him like
what
a half hour. They had some big, you know, what is it, the 4-1 or 4-11 thing, whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah, read his
Cincinnati.
Biography, The Last Free Man. The Last Free Man. Great
you know,
bio.
He was doing everything that's happening now, like 20 years ago, you know, and it's just a lot of that gets folded into Crackers for the Lycanthrope because the little old grandma woman, it gets into the history that she actually, you know, grew hemp. And,
nice.
You know, may have bootlegged, may not have bootlegged, you know. But
fun fact.
So,
David Galbraith's mother
to...
was my first grade teacher. His,
who was?
His mother was my – Gatewood Galbraith's mother was my first grade teacher at Mary Queen of the Holy Rosary Church in Lexington, Kentucky. So, yeah.
Oh, man.
I was her student.
First grade.
Yep, she was my teacher, his mother. Yeah, what a great guy, though.
Yeah,
loved him.
I really
loved him.
Yeah, and I just the only time I had a chance to actually talk with him was up, and this thing wasn't even Fountain Square. They were like outside of the federal court building there. I think it's the appeals court, and they had all these vendors and stuff set up though. Man, they had like Italian hemp. Because the whole premise of hemp paper, I'm sorry, but the whole premise of Crackers with the Lycanthrope, it's written. The guy's telling you, I've got these notebooks that I brought back with me from Italy that are hemp paper. You know, and then he meets these people in the gorge that are talking about all the kind of, you know, the medical uses for marijuana, the industrial uses, not just like hemp, but like as far as BTU value
sure.
and all this
yeah.
other kind of stuff. So that whole conversation gets, you know, kind of... you know, meanders
sure.
through this whole landscape of what's going on in that particular area. So
absolutely.
But yeah, anybody that
hundreds
has
of products,
gorge,
hundreds. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hemp is amazing.
Yeah.
Hemp is a miracle plant in industrial hemp. Cause I mean, you can literally make
and it's
hundreds
sustainable.
Of products.
It grows quick.
Mm-hmm.
It's sustainable. And they even can build houses out of it. Now you can make what they make hemp bricks. They like compress
yeah.
it and make bricks,
yeah.
and you can make
well,
homes out of this stuff.
Well, here's the thing. They don't want to tell everybody what they can actually do. But, see, it's like in the Commonwealth of Kentucky with these trout, with these hybrid striped bass, with these sawguy.
Yeah.
They could feed the world 100 times over, man, without any problems
right.
whatsoever. You know, the only thing that they don't is because they, I guess, want to put them in the water and let me catch them all. I don't know. But I don't mind. You know, but at the same time, it's like you could do
well,
this and
yeah,
not have any issues.
Mean.
It's like... There's a company
right.
called App Harvest in Moorhead.
Isn't that
Kentucky.
Funny how that works? Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly
but
right.
60 acres enclosed, and they're growing, you know, tomatoes. The guy wants to be the biggest, you know, it's a SPAC, so you got to watch yourself if you invest in it. But is it J.D. Vance, the guy that I always say Hillbilly Effigy, but I think it's called Hillbilly Elegy. The book and the movie.
Hillbilly Elegy, yes.
I call it effigy,
yeah.
too.
yeah. Well, I call it effigy for a different reason, probably, but that's beside the point. It's still a good story, and it's a good movie.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, we loved
but
it.
But he's the venture capitalist that I think, I want to say it was $500 million they put into that. He's tied into that. And
nice.
Wow.
You know, yeah, because I was listening to, you know, I don't watch a lot of news per se, but I do like watching the financial market stuff, like whether it's
right.
Fox Business or CNBC or, you know, Bloomberg, because they'll have, you know, a variety, whether it's Bitcoin or you know, cryptocurrency in general. They don't, I know people that talk more about that, but yeah.
Dogecoin to the moon. Kicking the spot right now.
Ether, though, man, is the digital gold, the Ethereum. You know that, right? But, you know, it's a little more
expensive.
Well,
that's doing well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Doge is a people's coin, though. I love it. It's a
but,
protest,
you know,
too.
That app harvest, all these tomatoes, man. I mean, you know, if they really wanted to, all this stuff could be a foregone conclusion. It's just okay. Like, why? Like, I was just, before I come down, they had Inferno on because I'm in my basement now. I was watching TV upstairs. And, you know, I love the Dan Brown stuff. In fact, the beta reader I had, one of the primary beta readers, when she read Cosmic Egg Rapture, she's like, you know what? You've got a lot of, like, Dan Brown feel type stuff that's happening in your book. And I'm like, yeah, I know I do. Because Da Vinci Code I read, like, in one day. I can remember when I first got a hold of the hardcover, I was like, golly, man. you know, this kicks. And I liked Angels and Demons too, the whole CERN thing, but the Inferno was like, you know, where you have this, you know, this whole effort to destroy the world in order to save it, which is a big premise in, you know, Rapture 3 as well, because it becomes like a, you know, self-fulfilling kind of prophecy. But the evil and good that are, you know, paired against each other, they're pretty, it's pretty graphic, pretty horrific, and, you know, pretty vital, really. But anyway, the whole point, coming back to what, like with Inferno, now it's like this whole, you know, the Basilica cistern where the virus is actually enclosed in Turkey, and if they explode it, then, you know, 90% of the world population or whatever dies, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, any of this stuff can be done at any time, whether they want to kill us all or let us all eat rainbow trout, you know. It's all, so I'm just here for the ride and write some books, meet cool people like Holly, the Dark One, and use them and everybody else.
The Dark One, yes.
Might be and, going to hell in a bucket, but at least I'm enjoying the ride. May the Grateful Dead rise again.
You got it. And next, and yes, and speaking of the Dark One, we will be talking about this next week, as once we get some details together. But looks like we will be talking about, I'm going to give a little teaser, but the Dark Style Scholarship. I can't say more right now, but the Dark Style Scholarship may be born in next week's show. So
well,
just hang
born,
on to that little tidbit.
You have to tune in.
We need a cryptocurrency coin with the Dark One.
Oh, man. I would get it. I would invest in that. And
oh, that'd be fantastic.
With all $10 I have to spend, I would definitely invest immediately.
Yeah. And with a bottle of his 1876 ketchup in his hands, you know.
Oh, my God.
Yes,
that would be the best cryptocurrency ever. Oh, my God. That would be awesome. All right, we got a project then for Joe, for Magic Joe. We got because he could program it. He could write the blockchain code.
That's true.
We definitely got to get a hold of Joe immediately.
Well,
that would be incredible.
That's what's interesting about Ethereum, the way it positions itself in terms of like the, you know, non-fungible tokens and all the decentralized apps. I mean, I'm looking at that thing now even more so like than Bitcoin, because that seems like, you know, because the old thing is anytime you get whatever you got a store of value or anything else like that. And even if it's not, you know, I'm not saying that crypto is not, because I think it is. It's clearly proliferated to the point where it's starting to become institutionalized.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, you can't have, it gets too big to fail. It reaches that point where, you know, you got too much money in big time investors coming in on all different angles, whether it's, you know,
well, it's neat.
Whatever.
It's of the big three buzz currencies right now. Bitcoin is stored value. Ethereum is utility with, like you said, with the apps and things like that. And then Dogecoin is actually very well modeled to be an actual currency and actually be spent on things. And like Dallas Mavericks and Newegg and Oakland A's now, and all kinds of places are taking Dogecoin now for products. So it's interesting. Each cryptocurrency is not just like one monolithic thing. You have different flavors, and like I said, stored value, utility, and currency usages, and it's kind of fun to see how all three are, you know. And they, you know, doing very, very well.
I mean, there's so many, and now you got like
Chainlink went from $6.
Chainlink or blockchain?
Another one.
Chainlink.
No, he's talking about Chainlink.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Chainlink.
Yes.
Went from $6 last, say, June to $48.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday.
Right.
Yeah. If you're in on that, man, you're buying a new house. You know, I mean, pretty quick. It
just
depends on the.
It's crazy.
The tomato steak. You know. But yeah, all that
frontier stuff.
I kind of follow what I can with it. You know, I'm of the old school where, you know, bulls make money and pigs get slaughtered kind of deal. So I kind of my tax kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, anybody that's been around long enough, it's like when everything, financial markets collapsed in, you know, 2008. I mean, you could see, I mean, I hate to be like, you know, tout disaster capitalism, but stuff that happens, you know, you guys just got to be ready as best you can to be, you know, you know, mobile and resilient and all those kinds of things to make what looks like a good move and just kind of, you know, keep an even keel. Because I can see where, you know, when you're talking about like small amounts overall that can jump like that chain link, I mean, you go anything from 8 to 48, man. I mean, you're off to the moon.
That's a jump.
You're doing good.
Yep, that's a jump.
But Holly, is it just me, or can you see the Hoff with his own island in the Caribbean one day wearing his, like, a flowery beach shirt? That'd be perfect.
Yeah. Hell yeah, fishing.
I'm waiting for a HUD.
With a giant egg sitting on top of the house.
Yeah. Oh, man, if I'm on my own island, man. You know, if I'm on my own island, you won't see me much. I mean, because one of my favorite books, this was a good movie, too, not that it's an island, but it's a general kind of sense of what, you know, I would end up doing if that were the case, is like 92 in the Shade, Thomas McGuane. I don't know if you saw the movie.
Okay.
It was like Peter Fonda was in it and Warren Oates. But anyway, I mean, that whole thing is, you know, where you get into the permit fishing, where they do the skiff fishing on the big, you know, with the pole, where they're using the poles and they're up in the chairs catching bonefish and permit. I mean, if I'm on a desert island, man, you know, it's bad enough in Virginia, you know, between going after oysters and sugar toads. That's my all-time favorite right there, the northern Atlantic puffer fish. I think that's the best fish I've ever eaten. You know, you don't want the southern one, man, because of the neurotoxins. They'll get you, but you can eat the northern one, and they are delicious.
That's awesome.
Flounder,
that's awesome.
I didn't know
rock
that.
Rockfish. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, we definitely need to go with Hoff on a fishing adventure into the ocean someday. That would be
I don't really get in. I watch the tuna shows, like the Wicked Tuna, and I'm digging what they're doing and everything. But I'm not really into, like, to me, fishing's still like a sport, you know. It's like I'm fishing to move and to think like a fish, you know. And sometimes that's harder than it sounds, you know. And the sport of it really, and you get a flavor of that in, like, the crackers with the lycanthrope. But even Cosmic Egg Rapture involves some fishing stuff that's in there as well. So, I mean, it's always been a part of my life, probably always will be, as long as I could see well enough to tie my hook on, you know. I used to do fly fishing. I don't do that as much. I don't do that at all anymore. It's just like, and I don't have a boat anymore. So everything I do, that's one of the reasons I moved where I did, because it had one of the best bank fishing places I've ever seen. Because I lived in Maysville for 5 years and used to fish a lot below Meldall Dam before it was hydroelectric. And they just had great, you know, you go to the overspill down there and just, you know, chuck out right behind it into the wickets. And, with all the water flowing out, man, you know. So that's kind of what I'm doing here at Markland. I mean, I fish a lot on the river.
That's what he does.
Not in a boat, but on the bank. You'd be surprised what you can catch.
On the bank.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I fish where the guys with the boat can't get to, and it's the best spot on the river. Yeah, I'm not kidding you. And, you know.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But,
they're out there in those deep waters when they need to be a little closer to the bank.
And they can't get there because I'm right there where the turbines are.
Yeah,
there you go.
No, they got them two turbines.
They can't
do it. They ain't up in there. You can't get within 500 feet of that.
Because
there's more engineers right there, you know.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, they got.
That's where some good catfish hang out and stuff.
They got anti-ship missiles that'll blow your boat out of the water if you get too close.
Oh, there's
impressive.
Monster catfish at Markland. Monster catfish.
Yeah,
That's how Martin survived Holly's son once. Because he had to put him down the river once, and the catfish saved him.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll have to have him tell you the story. You know, he's adopted. So he goes around telling people, she just shipped me down the river, Moses style, and I made a friend, old Catfish Joe, or whatever he calls him. We and old Joe go down the river, you know.
He said, he sounds like a born noodler. What are you talking about?
Yeah, he is. Good God. You hear him tell the story, though. It's hilarious. Moses.
Now, I can't remember the Droji.
Draugr.
Draugr.
Mm-hmm.
The Draugr. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Man, he did.
He was the Draugr.
He did a great job in that.
Yeah, he did. And what was so funny, he's already 6'5". We thought, oh, we're good, man. The Draugr, because we needed somebody really tall, really massive, really, oh, we're good, right? Well, then we cast Brock, who's 6'7". So he's taller than Martin. So Martin actually had to stand on an apple crate. He actually was standing on an apple crate when they were fighting.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Cool.
Yeah.
That'd be cool to see, like, you watch I forget what kind of animation it is, but the Grendel that came out, you know what I'm talking about, probably, I don't know, maybe 7-8 years ago, where it's, I forget what kind of animation that particular style is, but that would be cool to see, you know, something like that done in that format too, you know, the whole Raiden Valkyrie stuff with, you know.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You know, pop in. I see what David Sheridan's doing every once in a while. He's up to some complexity, looks like.
Oh, man,
oh, yeah.
Dave's taking
game
that game to new heights. Yeah, it's. I cannot wait to see. He was supposed to come this weekend and ended up getting a job offer that he couldn't turn down. And so
I got it for a major magazine. He got a photography gig for a major magazine.
Men's Esquire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
and,
man.
Couldn't beat the pay on that one. Trust me, it was nice.
I don't blame you, man. I'll miss you.
Yeah,
you
can't say the figure,
you.
But it's big. It was a big paycheck. So, we don't blame him.
I love that, man.
Not at all.
No, not at all. But that's
cool. When you can make some money doing what you love, you know, it's always good.
I'm just happy that I have fast internet and my bill went down.
Hey,
small victories.
Talk about win-win, man. That's it right there.
Yeah. I'm a simple person.
Money.
Yeah.
That's the American model. Yeah, that ain't the Wuhan.
Now I
got to
get everything hooked up. I got to go change everything in the house, though, over to the new internet. But I'll get that done tomorrow.
It'll be worth it. It is so fast.
It will.
Yeah, we went to gigabit service.
Is there anything we didn't cover that you wanted to cover, Rob?
Yes.
Oh,
Rob.
No, I'm good. I just feel like we're talking on the phone now. I don't, you know, I'm good.
No, that's the point. That's how it should be.
Yeah,
we want it to feel like that.
No,
that's
I'm ready for everybody to start going out and doing the, you know, what they need to do and get things back the way, you know, everything
back
was
the
cranked
word.
Up out. Yeah.
Well, you need to go down to Tennessee and see the Dark One and bring him a fish dinner, and then he can host you in his trolley, and it'll be a win-win all around.
Yes.
Hey, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try to Zoom with him and Babe Winkleman while I'm fishing, and let Babe give me some pointers while I'm fishing. See how that goes.
Hell yeah, or how yeah?
That
in your
would
case,
be
hell
awesome.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
You know it.
Howling at the moon. That would be awesome.
Too cool.
It's a small world.
Yeah, that's neat that he's doing that. So the third Lycanthrope book, I got to get down to, well, not really where he's at, but I mean, I wouldn't mind getting in. There's a lot of people are moving to Tennessee now too, just because they seem to have their, you know, state together in ways that, you know, makes it a little easier for people to, you know, function
Lives.
Without
yeah.
worrying about too much nonsense and noise, you know.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I do need to get down to Knoxville when I start writing that. I got to talk to some people about, because the whole Madoc thing, man, just fascinates me. So, and it's already in the first two Lycanthropes as far as that whole Welsh legend. So, yeah.
Daniel may know some.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe, because a lot of this is predicated out of Chattanooga area in Back Cave Creek. So, you know, it ties into, you know, a lot of lore. And, you know, it's kind of curious because the contract with Lycanthrope book is actually where there's a setting that actually is underwater. It's based on what the Tennessee Valley Authority flooded instead of the Red River Gorge, because they were going to flood the gorge. They were going to dam the gorge. And the reason they didn't, they had people like Wendell Berry and Diane Sawyer. They got William O. Douglas, the Supreme Court Justice, to come out. And that's where Moonshiner's Arch is. It's on what's the Douglas Trail, which is named after, you know, Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas for what he did to help keep the gorge from being dammed. I'll be damned right. I'll be damned in Tennessee because that's where they ended
up. I'll be damned. That's right.
And that ties to the whole, a lot of the Madoc legend and, you know, what's underwater. So I'm not big on scuba diving. Because I did a lot of research there for the contract with Lycanthrope book, but, you know, because when it comes to going into caves and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because it's fascinating to see all the stuff going on, like in Guatemala right now with all the Mayan ruins that they're picking up from the LIDAR. And,
right.
Well, I'll tell you.
But you can't really do it
on
the water.
Silvio goes... He goes caving. I mean, he's got the certifications or whatever they have to where he can go places that me and you can't go. But, and he goes into caves underwater and does all kinds of wild shit as far as that goes. So he might even know some of that.
Yeah. They did get out some, you know, there was one in the Smithsonian that I think ended up being moved to the Knoxville. There's a Cherokee Museum there. I need to sit down. I got one of the things on my agenda. I got to talk with Lee Pennington again at some point at length when he's got time to lay this on me again, because he's like one of the foremost people with regard to the kind of the Welsh legend or history, if you will, of, you know, really that presence in North America. I mean, Jim Alexander Tom wrote a great book called Children of First Man where they tried to splice a lot of this stuff together, but it's all picks up from this 12th century version of Prince Madoc coming over twice from Wales and, you know, coming up in Mobile Bay up to the Little Tennessee River and actually building, him and his brother building the sites near Chattanooga that were their forts and was the site where they waged war with the Cherokee. And then as a truce, they, you know, Madoc surrendered and they burned him alive and they let the other ones go. And they ended up, according to this book, at the Falls of the Ohio down in Jeffersonville where the falls actually were. Now that's a cool place where you can go see all the horn coral and stuff on in the rocks, you know, back when we used to was in where Africa is now kind of thing. But, yeah, it's a great quote-unquote historical novel, but it deals with that 11th century legend, and I'm really interested in the 6th century one. So, But that's where my head's going next, since I get this rapture wrapped up, you know. But this book turned out great, man. I can't believe how cool this book. One of the dudes I got that he beta read for me before. And he's read some stuff. I mean, and he's right there with it in the real world, too. And he's like, damn, man, that part was scary. I'm like, good. I'm not going to say what it is, but it's pretty.
That's my point, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll leave that on a cliffhanger then. Yeah, and people have to look to the future so they can find out what Rob's talking about.
Yeah,
so
there we go.
Excellent.
Hey,
excellent.
Always a pleasure to join you all. Appreciate
yes.
it. And, great to hear all
Thank you for joining us.
Oh, man.
Yes,
bet.
Including
Anytime,
yourself.
Buddy.
Congratulations, my
congrats
friend.
On the finalist, the nomination.
Hey, appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Glad to be there and here and everywhere. That's good. I like
Wishing
it.
You the best of the next phase. And as it enters the judge's hands. But, yes, definitely a definite kudo, though, being a finalist. So, absolutely, congratulations, man.
Right. And we will see you in a few weeks, if not sooner.
Yeah, that sounds good. If I shoot down to Lexington, I mean, I know that's been an open invite, and I haven't been down there much lately other than, like I say, my wife and I going around last year to all the Cumberland Falls and, you know, Greenbow Lake, and we went to several different, you know, state parks and stayed at the lodges and just enjoyed ourselves. It was great, you know, hardly anybody there. Had about the whole place to yourself and stuff. But next time I'm in Lexington, you know, I'll keep you all in mind and maybe shoot you a messenger that, hey, I'm at your front door.
Absolutely. Yeah, just let us
know
where
you're
at the front door.
We're in the office. That's where we're at.
We're not that excited.
Yeah,
yeah. We're usually just working away here.
Well, hey, I just thought on behalf of everybody that's involved in the arts in this region and beyond, what you two do is so valuable to so many people. And I know you know it, but
thank you, man.
You know, there's no way for you to really know it. Because, I mean, and, you know, sometimes, you know, people like myself get all, you know, they let us off our leash and, you know, things happen. But, you know, what you guys do as a forum for everyone is just tremendous. And, you know, you all are the ones that, you know, get the applause for everything that goes on. Because
we will keep fighting for you all. Don't worry.
Yeah. All right,
brother. We will definitely keep fighting. You take care, my friend, and, yeah, we'll see you sooner than later. I promise.
All right. Sounds good. Ciao.
Take care, man.
Night.
Night. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Yeah, thank you for listening to Star Chamber Show next Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Will be another great show with a featured creative guest. So over to Holly. Daniel, take us out. Been an awesome episode.
Again, congrats to all the Imagine 2021 finalists. Well earned. Good luck to all. And join us next week for another exciting episode. And have a great weekend, night. Okay, Daniel.
And you heard again tonight how creativity can strike from anywhere, from a gorge to a book. And you can be creative, and I want you to be creative this week until we talk again. This is Daniel Dark signing out.